Hey, welcome back to another episode of Teal Time with David Teal. I'm Jonathan Heater, alongside, as always, David Teal. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Good morning.
It's good to be here. I hope you had a good trip down to the ATL, my old stomping grounds.
I did. It was, Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Got a little tour of that on Friday morning after I landed. And then went from the newest of new to the oldest of old at Bobby Dodd Stadium, Grant Field, on Saturday afternoon. The password for the wireless at Grant Field is something something 1913, because that's the year that stadium was built.
And the field has been there, obviously, even longer.
Yeah, it's
A lot of history in that city for football.
It really is, and I mean, the press box is terrible. Not that anybody cares, but to sit there in the view of the skyline,
yeah.
And for a noon game, it's eh. But for night games, and that the majority of games that I've done in Atlanta have been night games.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, when that skyline is lit up and you're just sitting there over the, it's a pretty cool view now.
Now, what, I know I'm putting you on the spot. What, do you remember the first time you would have covered a game in that stadium?
Early 80s, early to mid 80s.
How different is the Atlanta skyline now versus it was in the early 80s?
Much different, yes.
Much different. And it's a great place to see. We've probably been in the press box at the same time and not known it for a Virginia Tech. I remember a Virginia Tech game on a Thursday night down in Atlanta.
Sure.
And they put off all these fireworks before the game, and Virginia Tech ran Georgia Tech off the field that night. But it's a pretty place to watch a game on a Saturday night,
or
a Thursday night.
Not a very enjoyable afternoon for Virginia Tech, though.
No, and you'll talk right now with Norm. You guys were both down in Atlanta and got to see the Hokies and losing a late lead in that game, right?
Well, yeah, and the lead, it was their only lead of the game, and it was a gift now, and it was a pick six that Taquan Marshall threw right to Greg Stroman, and I immediately had flashbacks to Reggie Ball, the former Georgia Tech quarterback who threw some inexplicable picks against the Hokies in that very stadium, going in that very direction, as I recall. And at that point, you thought, my gosh, Virginia Tech is going to steal one here, because it was a game it had no business winning. And then Georgia Tech turns around and hits them for an 80-yard touchdown pass to Ricky June. And then Virginia Tech and Justin Fuente, at least in my estimation, and I think in most fans' estimations, had some pretty serious brain cramps on the final drive, and Norm and I got into that.
All right, let's listen to you guys talk about the game.
Norm, I think for the first time in Justin Fuente's two seasons at Virginia Tech, we both walked away tonight going, what was he thinking?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, either, him and Cornelson, too.
Yes. Yeah, the offensive coordinator's involved now.
Yeah. I mean, you don't get the sense that, very often with that duo that they go into drives or very important downs, like third and one, fourth and one, like they had today, and not think that they don't know what they're doing, at least. And they really
I mean, they're always simpatico.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you would have thought that on one of those two downs they would have tried to run the ball. I mean, it just comes down to that. You know,
right.
It's just... And I know they only had 105 yards, but you got to be able to get a yard when you need a yard. And,
yeah, I mean, if you take that shot on third and one, then in my mind, you have to be prepared then on fourth and one to run the ball and get the first down.
Yeah, for sure. There's some odd play calling for sure there.
And going for two early was just baffling to me.
Yeah,
you just and I know, and he Fuente essentially admitted that he has little faith in his offense, and we're not going to have many scoring opportunities. That's paraphrasing him.
And limited skill players and things like that.
Yes,
too.
But it's almost like that lack of confidence, which I get.
Bleeds into the play calling.
Yeah, and it morphed into desperation today. And, you know, they lose to Georgia Tech 28-22. And if they play it more conventionally, kick the chip shot field goal, kick two extra points, that's a 28-27 game late.
Yeah.
And they don't have to take a shot in the end zone.
Yeah.
They just have to get in field goal range to win.
Yeah, I know. You know, and you think about it too. It's the situation. You know, there's a lot of different ways you can look at that failed 2-point conversion in the first half. And you know, it's the obvious one is that if they score, they're late. You know, and you've got it was 22-21 at that point, right? So it's 22-20. What am I messing up here? It's 22-21 when they score that touchdown. So it would have been 23-21. And all you have to do is kick
the extra point, and a field goal does not beat you.
Exactly. The field goal doesn't beat you.
Because Georgia Tech, I mean, you know, Marshall comes back and throws the 80-yard touchdown pass.
Yeah.
They didn't need a touchdown.
Exactly.
All they needed was a field goal.
And they'd be in running mode, and they had not run the ball like Georgia Tech runs the ball.
Except for the 169-yard reverse in the first half.
Which Bud Foster said that they had never seen before.
He had never seen. So, hey, you know, good on CPJ for coming up with a new wrinkle. And, you know, you mentioned Bud Foster, and, hey, I think everybody was crushing the play calling afterward, and rightfully so. But you cannot, under any circumstances, get beat deep against Georgia on 3rd and 18.
Yeah, I know. And
that guy had never caught a touchdown pass in his career.
Yep. The two longest pass plays of
Georgia Tech seasons.
In Taquan Marshall's career in Georgia Tech's season, the previous being the 49-yarder. So now you have two straight seasons where Bud Foster will go back and say, well, you know, the two plays last year, you had the 53 and the 56-yard run that beat them. And, you know, without that, they've got 200 yards of rushing instead of a 309. And then today, you know, he's like, well, you know, three plays, you know, a 60-yard touchdown pass, an 80-yard touchdown pass, and a 69-yard reverse, you know. And you stop those three plays, it's a totally different game. Well, you could say that about every game. And we talk about this a lot. We joke about it because it's, you know, this is a – That's an old Frank Beamer thing. Frank Beamer used to like to say, well, you know, two plays here, three plays there. I remember comically after one game he mentioned five or six plays, you know. Okay. So, and that's the thing. He's a defensive coordinator. He will go back and he will grind and he will beat himself up over two or three plays, and that's what they do. But those are the two plays, especially those pass plays, you have got, as you said, you have got to stop against these guys. All week long, Bud Foster harped on watch out for the play action. You can't get caught looking in the backfield, talking to cornerbacks and guys in coverage. And guess what happened? It happened twice. You know, Mook Reynolds on the 80-yard touchdown pass to win the game, basically the game winner.
Yep.
And then Terrell Edmonds on the 60-yard pass to Stewart. So, you know, couple of veteran players, you wouldn't expect that to happen. So.
Yeah, and Josh Jackson is clearly struggling. You know, he didn't throw a pick today, but that's only by the grace of God.
I think his confidence is rocked, man. He's having to run now a little bit. I'm talking about running around in the pocket.
Pocket, yeah.
Trying to scoot away from people.
Yeah.
And that's – he didn't have as much of that issue earlier in the season when the schedule was maybe a little bit lighter.
And he had Nijman protecting his backside.
Yeah, exactly, on the left side of the tackle, side of the line. That's a good point.
And he was not there today, and Osterloh's there again. It did not go well. How many sacks did Georgia Tech have?
I think they had just saw two.
Two for 16 yards.
They averaged 1.75 coming into the game, so it's not bad.
But he was flushed out a lot. I'll tell you, I didn't like it on fourth down, but I did like the look that A.J. Bush gives them as kind of a
change of pace.
Yes, change of pace quarterback, a so-called wildcat.
Yeah.
I think he's very effective in that role. I'm surprised it hasn't happened prior to this week. I think we'll see more of it.
I do too.
The last 2 weeks against Pittsburgh and UVA.
But I agree with you about the fourth down. To me, that's just an odd place to put him in, especially in the red zone when it's fourth and two.
It's putting it all on him.
You're putting it all on him, and Georgia Tech has a pretty darn good idea about what he's going to do in that scenario, you know?
Right.
So I just thought it was a strange spot to put Bush in.
Right.
So.
And even if that play worked, I can't believe they didn't drop a flag.
Yeah.
Because I swear, and I haven't gone back and looked at the replay, it appeared that two Virginia Tech players.
The snap was late.
Yeah. And there's two players in motion, and that's an illegal shift, the best I know.
Yeah.
And no, that play was a.
It was a weird play.
It was a circus from the beginning. And, you know, these Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech games, they are just flat out weird. And the only reason Virginia Tech got the lead late was that Taquan Marshall throws that pass, and you're like,
right at Greg Stroman.
I mean, threw
it. It's like it's his intended receiver. I mean,
threw it to him, and Stroman tiptoes down the left sideline to give Virginia Tech his first lead. And you're thinking, wow, they are going to escape here.
Yeah.
And
that was basically my lead, you know, the fact that they looked like they were going to steal a victory, and then all of the hiccups and mental foibles of early in the game kind of caught up to them with the late defensive lapse and the two questionable play calls. So, now you move on. Pittsburgh next week, which they should. They should win that game. Pittsburgh coming off a loss to a bad UNC team at home.
At home.
I know. Senior night and all that good stuff there in Blacksburg. So you figure that's a win. But then, there's a team in Charlottesville that got their butts handed to them today, too.
And may again next week.
And might again next week.
At Miami, by the way.
So, they go into the last, say, okay, so let's say you've got 8-3 Tech and 6-5 Virginia at that point, and both are just kind of playing for a better bowl position, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And of course, Virginia trying to snap a 13-game losing streak. I think they've got a pretty good chance this year, based on what we've seen in the last couple weeks. Anyway, I did not see Virginia against Louisville tonight.
Yeah.
Did not sound very good. Didn't sound great, but
no.
I think Virginia has a chance, and I've said this a few times during the streak, during Virginia Tech's win streak against them, but I still think that based on what Bronco's done this year and how much better they look than last year, I think they've got a chance. We're looking ahead a little bit, but I got to think that Virginia Tech's players are kind of looking ahead to that too at this point. So I don't know. We'll see.
It could make for a very interesting Black Friday. I mean, the Tech UVA games are always fascinating to us because we're immersed in the rivalry.
Yeah.
And I don't think this one will be any different regardless of the outcome. I mean, if Virginia Tech could win its next two games and finish 9-3 in the regular season for the second consecutive year with this team that is so much more limited than last year, 9-3 in my mind.
It's better than I thought they'd be this year.
Big picture, I picked Virginia Tech to finish third in the Coastal.
I know, you had Georgia Tech winning the thing.
I had Georgia Tech winning the thing in Miami second.
I had that. Well, I had Miami winning the thing, so.
Yeah, and you're right, indeed it has.
But a lot of people did, so I wasn't unique in that pick.
But another 9-3 regular season, I think to me would be a hell of a.
Yeah, I had them 8-4. I had Tech finishing 8-4 this year. So, to me that's a successful year if you can have a chance at 10 wins going into the bowl. You know, so. Yeah,
but if they lose that finale, it will take. You know that will hurt, and the program will, have to. Re-examine some things.
Yeah. I mean, you wonder. I don't know if one game really changes recruiting.
No.
And these two. That's the interesting thing.
But you
about
just
these
reevaluate
two teams.
Your assessment of the year.
That's the interesting thing about these two teams is that. I mean, that's probably a topic for another podcast. But these two teams, just because of what they do, I think they recruit so differently. I
mean, oh, yeah.
So I'm not sure if they're really going to, and they don't compete right now as it is, and that's because of, I think, the results that we've seen in recent mm-hmm. years. But I don't know if they're really going to compete that much if they both get to be, you know, above average, both respectable teams. Yeah. I just don't know if they're going to cross over that much based on what Bronco does and what Justin does. So that'll be interesting if we can see that at some point, you know, two couple teams winning records and at least vying for recruits and see who's a tech. You might see who's a tech guy and who's a UVA guy who's just interested in the different systems. You know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, you and I are going to have an interesting weekend, Friday and Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have UVA VCU in a Friday afternoon hoops matinee.
Yeah,
love that 4 o'clock tip, and
for
then
sure.
just mosey back to Blacksburg for Virginia Tech Pitt and a noon kick Saturday.
Which is great, too. Sorry, fans.
Yeah.
It's a great thing.
12:20.
Love those noontime kicks.
To be specific, but looking forward to it, man. We'll see you then.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, now we're back, and I don't want to harp too much because you guys just talked about it. But I imagine on the call, on the fourth down
mm-hmm.
pass, he must have liked the matchup with a young corner on Cam Phillips.
Oh, absolutely. They had it one-on-one, and this call came after a timeout. So this was not done on the fly. This was calculated. This was Fuente and his offensive coordinator, Brad Cornelson, and, you know, team decision. I guess where I really disagreed with it was because they took the shot on third and one.
Yeah.
And I think if you take the shot on third and one and miss, you've got to be prepared at that point, because you're not fooling anybody now. You've got to go get the yard. Just man up, line up, run inside, get yourself a yard, move on, extend the game, and go.
And I don't have the exact timeline of this because I was just watching casually, but they started gashing them on the ground. And I don't know if it was at some point in the third quarter or some point in the fourth quarter when that happened, but they were picking up big chunks of yardage on the ground.
Yeah, and they hadn't hit a deep ball all day. I mean, the one for 26 yards was off a deflection off two Georgia Tech defenders. That was sheer luck, but otherwise they had not done any business at all down the field. So yeah, they hit Trayvon McMillan on a wheel route in the first half, but really trying to get it down the field to wide receivers was not working. So that's why, really, to take two shots like that back to back with the game on the line, when you didn't need to. It's not like there was only 5 seconds left and this is your last play. You're on the 32. You've got plenty of time. You've got timeouts in your pocket. It's the first time I've really walked away from a Virginia Tech game the last two seasons just going, what was he thinking?
It's funny. Paul Johnson probably was having a little PTSD from the Miami game when that ball bobbled up.
Oh, yeah.
On Saturday. I mean, Georgia Tech at that point was getting a lot of pressure on Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
They were forcing him into some bad throws.
Yeah.
That was a bad throw.
Oh, it was a terrible throw. Back foot, under pressure, rolling to his right.
Into a crowd.
Yeah.
And it just, it was lucky bounce, and they went down and scored on that drive.
Yes, they did.
But, yeah, the two of the more questionable throws you'll ever see in that game for both quarterbacks. The Marshall throw is one of the worst throws I've ever seen. I mean, in terms of what happened out of it, game time and result, to throw a pick six at that point on that bad of a throw, that was I just couldn't imagine what Paul Johnson must have said to him.
Yeah, but they got away with it. And now the Jackets are one win away from bowl eligibility, and you think they get it this week against Duke?
I would think so. I mean, it was looking pretty grim for them. And I know they missed a bowl, like, 2 years ago.
Yes.
But they had a bowl string of, like, 18 years
yes.
or something like that.
Yeah, they were 3-9 two years ago.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've talked a lot about that. You and Norm talked about it. Let's move over to Virginia.
Sure.
It seemed like from reading players' comments leading into the game that they weren't satisfied with bowl eligibility, that they wanted to chase more. And that came to an abrupt halt at the arms and legs of
Lamar Jackson. Yeah. I mean, Virginia scores a touchdown on a trick play on its opening possession, and the lead was very short-lived because then Lamar Jackson busts one. I think it was for 68 yards. And the defense couldn't handle him, and the offensive line couldn't handle Louisville's front. Four sacks. I think Virginia ran for 60-some yards as a team. Now that total gets skewed by the yardage you lose on sacks, but still, Jordan Ellis and company weren't getting anything, any running room. The offensive line got no push, and that offensive line is facing a whole lot bigger challenge this week down at Miami than it did Saturday at Louisville.
So Virginia, I can't remember a lot of teams that have had this many ebbs and flows. Like, we were all buying in at 5-1, 5-2, mm-hmm. thought they had a chance to get to 7, maybe 8 wins. And then after the stretch against, was it Boston College and Pittsburgh,
yeah.
You thought, oh man, they may not make a bowl mm-hmm. with the closing schedule. They beat Georgia Tech. Louisville's gettable. Yeah. I mean, maybe they can get back to 7. There's just been a lot of ebbs and flows this season for them.
Well, and that's kind of what Bronco Mendenhall has anticipated. He preaches a lot about the process and patience, and he's got a thin team with very little margin for error, and it's going to be that way for a while. And the fascinating thing this week is which Miami team shows up. Is it the Notre Dame Virginia Tech Miami team or the Carolina Miami team? But now that they're sitting there at number 3 in the playoff rankings, they have everything to play for. And I just looked online earlier, and it says that the Virginia game is close to a sellout down there for a noon kick. So good on Miami fans for keeping up the momentum. And I think the team might need that energy on Saturday just because of the emotional highs of the past 2 weeks. It's almost impossible, you know, to dip into that well one more time and be at peak performance level.
I was watching the game, and Fountain Herb Street were very...
Oh, you're talking about Miami Notre Dame.
Yeah, we're very apt numerous times in that game to comment on the atmosphere. You said 2 weeks ago when you were down there that it's as rocketing as you've been to a game down in Miami. So, I don't know. You know, there's obviously the Miami swagger that's been going on for, 30 years.
Right, as embodied now with the turnover chain.
Yeah, right. It's weird to see something like that, which is not a tangible thing, permeate through a program and student-athletes who are only there for 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And it seems like, more so than any other team, that identity has stuck with them, and they embrace it. And if they can tap into the emotion of a crowd, you know, it could be a very dangerous team. Now, they're not playing the ACC championship game in Miami, Florida.
No, they'll be playing it in Charlotte against a rather stout group in Clemson, too.
We'll get into that in a little while. Sure. We got a couple questions this week on Twitter, finally.
Okay.
From @Zach Barefoot. He asked, to me, it seems like Bronco's year two and London's year two are very similar. Do you believe that Bronco is setting himself up for more sustained success long-term with his relatively poor ranking recruiting classes?
Well, that's going to be the key, and I think the jury is still out as to whether Bronco Mendenhall and his staff, all of whom, except for Marcus Hagans, the lone holdover from the Mike London era, they're all from out west. And can they recruit this region, the type of players that they're going to need to compete in the ACC? And I don't think we know the answer to that yet. I think we know that Bronco Mendenhall can coach, especially on the defensive side. But you can coach all you want. You don't have athletes, it's not going to work. Now, is Bronco Mendenhall managing the program in terms of roster balance and position balance and class balance better than Mike London did? Absolutely. That will help as he looks to sustain this success long term. But at the end, it's all going to be measured by recruiting.
Well, as a tease for Thursday's paper, you guys may be listening to this on Thursday. If it posts Wednesday night, look forward to this tomorrow. Mike London is going to be in town this weekend with Howard, and you'll have a column on
him. I will. I talked to Mike earlier this week. He sounds great. I've known Mike forever. He's from here. He played here, then played at the University of Richmond, coached at William & Mary, and obviously had a rough go of it at UVA. But this is his first year at Howard. He took over a program that had won 8 games combined the previous 3 seasons. And coming to Hampton University on Saturday, the Bison are 7-3, 5-6 or 6-1 in the MEAC in sole possession of second place. He's got Cam Newton's little brother as his quarterback, Kalen Newton. And they've got an offense they're averaging better than 30 points a game. They're almost perfectly balanced, 200 yards plus running and passing. And they've had some wild, wild finishes, starting with the season opener when they won out in Vegas at UNLV as the greatest, you know, point spread underdog in the history of college football to win 45 points.
Speaking of Vegas, I know that people take odds on Heisman winners, and I know that is a rough transition, but I do want to ask you, why is Lamar Jackson not mentioned as a Heisman front runner?
Well, Baker Mayfield is having such a great year, and Oklahoma is so much in the spotlight that I think it's natural. And also you've got Bryce Love out at Stanford, but mostly Baker Mayfield. He's just been so good, and Oklahoma's performances have been so good. And they've been on bigger stages. You know, Louisville hit the skids, and Jackson hasn't had that big stage this season. Now his numbers are better.
Better?
Yes. They absolutely are. And he's going to get some – he may find his way onto my ballot. You list 3 people. Mm-hmm. But right now, if I were voting tomorrow, I would vote with the vast majority and put Baker Mayfield there.
It's going to be hard for him to lose it now because outside of the Big 12 championship game, they vanquished most of their toughest opponents. So for him, he's clearly in the front runner seat now and doesn't have a lot of time to lose it, I don't think. Somebody else can step up and take it away from him, but I think in a year that it's been very topsy-turvy in terms of the Heisman front runner, because we were all giving it to Saquon Barkley about a month ago.
Right.
I think it's going to be hard to beat him, but if we're talking about the best player in college football, and we've had this discussion before, see Ndamukong Suh, to me, Lamar Jackson presents a pretty interesting case.
He really
because he won it last year, and his numbers are better.
And he's fun to watch, but he's just not going to have the stage. I mean, he closes. Against Syracuse and Kentucky?
Yeah,
that's not going to draw many eyeballs. He's not going to be playing championship weekend.
Right.
What will be interesting? Does he get invited back to New York?
I don't know if he will, and I think that'd be a shame because I think he deserves to be there.
I think it'd be pretty cool if he was too.
And Mayfield, I think we both agree, probably won it with the 600 large against Oklahoma State at Bedlam.
And we could be looking at Bedlam too in the Big 12 championship game, especially since TCU has serious injury issues going to play Texas Tech this week. Texas Tech wins there. Then we're looking at Bedlam too in the Big 12 title game.
Louisville is now bowl eligible with their win.
Yep.
We talked a little bit about Miami's just demolition of Notre Dame.
Wow.
It wasn't even as close, I don't think, as the score indicated.
They were just ravenous on defense. They just shut down Josh Adams, and it was, you know, because that offensive line of Notre Dame, it's the nation's best. You talk to anybody, but nope, not on that night.
And we sung the praises of Brandon Wimbush last week, and I know he's got some hand problems, but I mean, wow. They shut him down, and that pick six was the backbreaker right at the end of the first half.
Yeah, it sure was. And Malik Rozier continues to play well. And then Homer, there at the running back mm-hmm. position, you know, he's been fabulous.
We both thought when Mark Walton went down that they were in trouble.
Yep. But, hey, that's what the old Miami teams used to do. They could reload mm-hmm. like that. They had athletes in waiting. And clearly at that position, they certainly did again.
They've won 14 in a row, which is obviously the nation's longest winning streak, and have avenged all five of their losses from last year.
How about that?
Florida State, all four of their losses.
Okay.
Virginia Tech, UNC, Notre Dame, Florida State. I can't wait for the championship game. That is going to be a lot of fun, I think.
Well, if they both win out, Clemson and Miami, that will be the first matchup ever of top five teams in the ACC title game.
That's right. If Miami stays undefeated and they lose to Clemson, do you see a way that they get into the playoff? Does there have to be some other chaos at the bottom?
Yes. I don't know about chaos. The really interesting case to me would be 11-1 Miami, because they don't have that Arkansas State game, so they're lacking a game. Mm-hmm. But it would be 11-1 Miami, and if that only loss is a close one to Clemson, how would the committee stack them up against 11-2 Ohio State with a Big Ten championship? It'd be really interesting, because in my mind, the committee has Ohio State, I think, at 8 or 9 in the rankings. I have Ohio State several spots lower.
Lower?
Yes, because Ohio State not only has two losses, Ohio State got worked twice.
Yeah. They are an enigmatic team.
Yes, and I'm sorry, I think there has to be a price paid there. Oklahoma beat them on their turf by 2 touchdowns, and then the Iowa game, man, pick six the first play and never recovered. If you're a playoff team, I think you need to be better than that.
I think you're right. I think the regular season has to matter. And they had two just blowout losses. And the Iowa loss is, I mean, that's not a top team. You could chalk Oklahoma up to being, you know, maybe Oklahoma is one of the top 2 or 3 best teams in the country. They are at this point. But if you were telling me in a vacuum, asking me who I think the 4 best teams in college football are, I think at their best, Ohio State, and I know that's a flawed argument to make,
because
a lot of teams at their best can be very, very good.
Yep.
I think Ohio State still could make a case for one of the 4 best. And maybe that's pedigree of coaching that I'm chalking that up to, because the guy, I mean, we've seen him do so much with little. I mean, he won a national championship with a 3rd-string quarterback. So maybe I'm giving him too much credit, Urban Meyer. But, I think right now, based on what has happened on the field, it's hard to have Ohio State anywhere near that top 4.
Yeah, and you know who's going to have a large say in the Big Ten race and the playoff picture? Harbaugh, Jim.
Mm-hmm. Wisconsin this week?
Yep, and then Ohio State the following week. Boy, if the Wolverines got one or both of those scalps, Big Ten could be out of the playoff.
Yeah, I think you're right. And Auburn also presents an interesting. We talked last week about them having the chance to play the ultimate spoiler, because they got Georgia and they got Alabama, and they ran Georgia off the field, literally the ground game. They just ran Georgia off the field.
I voted Auburn 5th. This week, ahead of Wisconsin.
I think they're a better team than Wisconsin.
I do too. I think if they played on a neutral field, Vegas would favor them. And yes, Auburn's lost twice. I understand that. But unlike Ohio State, the Tigers didn't get worked. They lost by 8 at Clemson, and I think it was by 3
against LSU.
At LSU.
Right. 2 notoriously tough places to play.
Both Death Valleys.
Right. So here's the thing.
And by the way, just crushed the consensus or the committee's number 1 team.
Now, I will say this about Georgia.
You thought they were a fraud.
Smoke and mirrors, because their clear best win was Notre Dame, right?
Yep.
and they needed a late, or Notre Dame had a late, or they made a late field goal in the final 4 minutes or so to beat Notre Dame up in South Bend. It's a good win, no doubt about that.
Yep.
But after what happened to Notre Dame on national television on Saturday night, this is what's happening this year to us, that we're going crazy because everything we think we know has changed. Is that Notre Dame game as good? Is that Notre Dame win as good as we thought it was?
I think it probably, look what happened to USC when it went to Notre Dame.
That's true. But the SEC East may be the worst I've ever seen it.
It's awful.
And so there's no way you can gauge how good a team is just from what they've done in that side of that division.
Yeah.
Now,
I think Georgia's game against Georgia Tech will be curious.
It's a good barometer.
It will be. And then the SEC championship game is going to just be fascinating. Georgia against either Auburn or Alabama.
I mean, Alabama is now the number one team in the country, and they needed a late touchdown drive to escape Starkville.
Mm-hmm.
So there is not – I can't remember many years where there's not a team where you're just like – going into the last few weeks of the season where you think it's theirs to lose. I think every team has flaws, and it's going to be a wild finish to the season.
Yeah, and well, the playoff will be just great.
All right, so we still got a lot of ACC to talk about, but I do want to ask you one last about the top four.
Yeah.
I tweeted out Saturday night that I thought it would be, or maybe I thought what I thought was, Bama, Miami, Oklahoma, Clemson. Mm-hmm. You had Clemson.
I had Clemson 3.
Yeah, and Miami
2.
And so Oklahoma 4.
Yeah.
I mean, I think those are the four teams.
Oh, I think it's clear,
hard to
right?
argue that yeah. those are the four teams. I think Oklahoma's win over Ohio State elevates them for me. Plus, Clemson's been a little shaky.
Right. And plus, Oklahoma beat Oklahoma State as well.
All right, TCU. I mean, yeah. they've got a pretty good amount of good wins, and I think they're playing better right now than Clemson. But Clemson and Miami are going to get a chance to settle it, and one of those teams are surely getting in at this point.
I know the Miami faithful were all bent out of shape last night when Clemson was ahead of the Canes, but it really doesn't matter.
It does not matter.
They will play one another and settle it.
Just like if Auburn beats Alabama and they win the SEC championship game, they're in, right?
Yes.
With two losses.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Back to ACC, Florida State, surprisingly, I think, hung in with Clemson for three and a half quarters, right at three quarters.
And I'll tell you what, after the Kelly Bryant fumble, they're sitting there in plus territory with a chance to go ahead, and then first play, he throws a pick. That's what happens when you have a true freshman at quarterback. Blackman threw a pick. Clemson comes down, scores one, and then scores another late for some style points and wins by 17. But, yeah, credible performance, I thought, by Florida State. And now, you know, a chance to win the next three and get bowl eligible.
Georgia Tech this week, they have Duke for bowl eligibility. Yep. I think both think they're going to get it.
Yeah. Very disappointed if you're David Cutcliffe in looking at Duke's performance. What they won their first four, now they've lost six straight, and that performance at Army was weak.
But the good thing about that is they saw the offense. Option. They got a practice against the option this
yep.
week. So rarely, I'm sure when he saw that schedule, he's like, okay, I'll take that.
Yeah, yeah. How many? That'd be fascinating to look at. Who? How many times has a P5 faced back-to-back option teams?
Probably not very often.
No.
NC State squeaks by BC.
That is a sneaky good win to go up to BC, where a lot of teams have gotten whacked this year, and where Virginia Tech, you know, it won comfortably, but still didn't score a lot of points. I give the Wolfpack a lot of credit, but wow, I think NC State Wake Forest is the most interesting game on the ACC docket this week.
I think so too.
Wake last week,
64-43 win over Syracuse.
Given up 38 in the first half.
I wrote some stats down.
Yeah.
About that game, Wake outscored Syracuse 40-5 in the second half.
Yep.
An ACC record for yardage, 1,355 total yards. School record 734 yards by Wake. The most points Syracuse has ever allowed in the Carrier Dome. Wolford broke the school record for touchdowns.
Yeah, Wolford had almost 500 yards, and they had a running back go for almost 240, Matt Colbert.
He's 363, 461, and 363, 461, 331 in his last three games. And he's 20 touchdowns and three picks on the season.
And NC State's defense is terrific, and Bradley Chubb might be the ACC Player of the Year. He leads the nation in tackles for loss. I think that is a terrific game Saturday in Winston-Salem.
Is Wolford getting into the discussion of maybe all-ACC first-team quarterback?
No, Lamar Jackson will be.
That's right. That's right.
Your Heisman.
I just toted him for the Heisman.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you don't have everything in front of you.
Yeah, but Wolford will be on that second or third team, absolutely.
Yeah. Back to BC, they have five wins. They have UConn and Syracuse left. I think they probably beat UConn.
I think they should, but you know, Anthony Brown, their freshman quarterback, down for the year.
Yeah.
Leg injury, so that means Darius Wade moves into the starting role, or I would think he would. So that complicates things for the Eagles. But I think to get back to a bowl for a second consecutive season would secure Steve Adazio some more time with his brand new AD.
Where does AJ Dillon? Is he the biggest surprise this year in the ACC? Do you think on offense?
Probably just because he's a freshman and you don't know a lot about them. But he's been terrific, and he broke off a big one last week against NC State. So somebody suggested, when I was emailing with a colleague out in Roanoke, and we were talking about BC losing its quarterback, and he said, just direct snap it to Dillon and take out the middleman.
Old, single wing?
Yes.
120, 272, 149, and 196 are five of his last six performances.
Pretty
and he's
strong.
Over 1,000 yards on the season. Syracuse is at four wins, and they close with Boston College and who is their other game against?
Syracuse is at Louisville this week.
So, yes, they have Louisville and Boston College to close, right?
Syracuse is not getting
no,
to bowl.
No, I don't think bowl. So either.
They don't defend well enough.
Speaking of bowl hopes, Pittsburgh's were dashed on Thursday night. Or was it Thursday night? Yeah. What a terrible loss against North Carolina at home. And
gave up a 98-yard kickoff return right off the bat.
That's right.
To Anthony Ratliff Williams. Can't happen.
They went 8-5 the first 2 years with Pat Narduzzi. Yeah. Is he in trouble?
I don't think he's in trouble, but this is clearly a step back. They're not very good on either side of the ball. But it's an interesting matchup, Jonathan, this week at Virginia Tech, because the one thing that the Hokies have been unable to do in the passing game is get separation on the perimeter and win a lot of one-on-one matchups. And Pitt, and they did this last year up there against the Hokies, and Isaiah Ford and Bucky Hodges and Gerard Evans made them pay. They just played press coverage, dared them to beat them on the perimeter just so they could take away the run. And I think they'll do the same thing on Saturday, much as Georgia Tech did.
Mm-hmm. Nothing good going on in Pittsburgh, because their basketball team has gotten off to an 0-2 start, losing to Navy and Montana at home.
And Wake
the Montana game.
To which Wake Forest basketball fans say, hold my beer, we've lost to Georgia Southern and Liberty.
That'd be an interesting debate. Which of those two, which team has a worse start to the season?
Ooh.
Losing to Montana at home. That's pretty rough. And you've been to games at Pitt, right, for basketball?
I have.
That's a pretty good atmosphere when they're rolling.
Well, I'm sure it was not a very
I'm
good
sure
atmosphere.
The Oakland Zoo was not very,
no.
Very, very hyped up for that one. At least the Pitt throwbacks are nice. I saw they wore those on Thursday night. So I think they're some of the best throwbacks there.
They are cool. Like them a lot. Take you back to the Dan Marino, Tony Dorsett days.
It's funny how when you're in the life of a jersey, how you really don't think much about it. And then when you start to see them come back, you're like, man, that was a really sharp jersey.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's talk a little bit about this week. We went over Georgia Tech, Duke, Florida State hosts Delaware State. That'll be their fourth win.
Yep.
Clemson has the Citadel. That'll be their 10th win. Miami and Virginia Tech. Miami and Virginia. Miami's already beaten Virginia Tech. What is Virginia's most likely path to an upset? What do they have to do right to beat Miami?
No turnovers. No turnover chain. That is job one.
Keep that in the jewelry box.
Yes, because if it's out, it's going to be a long afternoon. And then, you know, just some ball control, you know, and try to grind out some yards and shorten the game, fewer possessions. I just don't think the Cavaliers are capable of that against a team like Miami.
I don't think so either. Now, a week after North Carolina's biggest win of the season, they host Western Carolina. I expect North Carolina to win, but who knows?
Right.
Syracuse is at Louisville. I think Louisville probably wins that one. Boston College at UConn. I think Boston College wins.
That game's at Fenway.
Oh, is it at Fenway?
Yes.
I think Boston College wins.
I do too.
And then the aforementioned NC State at Wake Forest. Should be a fun one.
It's going to be a really good game. I will err on the side of defense and pick the Wolfpack just because I was really impressed by that road win at BC last week. But that's going to be a very interesting game to watch.
And you'll have filed your story from Blacksburg by that point, right?
So yeah, I got to
sit down and watch.
Yeah, we got a noon game.
Okay, let's talk about hoops.
Sure, we can do that real quick.
Strong, I would say, pretty strong, or at least not much embarrassment for the ACC over the first week, with the exception of Pitt and Wake Forest.
Yeah, aforementioned.
That lost to Navy. Navy lost by 34 to Miami.
Yeah.
And then beat Pitt. Mm-hmm. It's not a lot of bright, not very bright future for the Panthers this season, I know.
Well, it's a completely, and I mean completely, overhauled roster.
Where were they preseason picked?
Oh, last.
Last.
Oh, dead last.
Was Wake 13th? Or
Wake was down there.
15th.
Wake was down there with BC in that range, but no, the Panthers were the consensus choice to finish last.
Over the weekend, it seemed like the most interesting game was the Georgia Tech-UCLA game out in Shanghai. Tech loses on a buzzer. They had a shot at the buzzer to tie the game.
Yeah, and to be without Okoji, and the other kid who...
Patrick Jackson.
Yeah, who was suspended. That's a very credible effort.
Yeah. Now... UCLA, those
knuckleheads who, man, if Steve Alford and Dan Guerrero don't suspend them. Because, you know, when you go on an international trip, you sit the players down beforehand and say, look, don't do anything. You just emphasize it over and over again, and they ignored it. And
they better be lucky that they're basketball players and not just regular American citizens who were traveling in China.
Yep, absolutely. They caught a serious break, but no, that was an encouraging effort from Georgia. I think Georgia Tech's got a chance to be decent. I like that team.
Lammers can play.
He absolutely can. I voted him preseason All ACC. He's a very capable offensive player. He's terrific on the defensive end. He's a rim protector.
I thought when I saw him on first team All ACC, I couldn't believe it. And then I watched some of that game the other night when we got done with preps, and he looked like, and this is a name that shouldn't be mentioned, but he looked like Tim Duncan. I mean, he had a very soft touch. He was pretty accurate from anywhere he shot. He had, you know, a nice 17, 18 footer. I mean, he played really well. And he'd scored a giant portion of their points early in that game.
Yeah, no, he's quite good. And before we head out to Blacksburg for Virginia Tech and Pitt, we've got UVA VCU hoops. Mm-hmm. on Friday afternoon. That'll be the Rams' 102nd consecutive sellout. It is a great place to watch a game, and is a very good early season road test for Tony Bennett's crew. It's interesting, you know, Bennett did not play Jay Huff, the heralded 7-1 redshirt freshman, in the season opener against UNCG, but then he brings him off the bench the other night against Austin Peay, and he goes for 16 points and clearly a crowd favorite already. Watching the two red shirts, Huff and DeAndre Hunter, is going to be a lot of fun this season at UVA, because I think, as go they, they could very much be indicators for how the Cavaliers' season goes.
And Virginia Tech, man, they've got a freshman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Nikhil Alexander Walker. Yeah. He's the best freshman to show up on that campus since Del Curry.
Yes, and what, he scored 20?
Oh, he's been over 20 in both games. Of course, neither opponent played a lick of defense, especially right. The Citadel.
29 against the Citadel. He scored 132 against the Citadel.
Right, and that's the way the Citadel is going to play. Duggar, their coach, used to be at VMI and did the same thing there. They just want to run up and down and play that old Loyola Marymount, Paul Westhead type of style. But, you know, the Hokies go up to New York this week for a little four-team tournament. They open with St. Louis, which has been down of late. We'll see. You know, and then, you know, after Thanksgiving week, we've got the ACC Big Ten Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But both, you know, both UVA and Tech are at home, so we'll hit those back to back.
Virginia Tech has Iowa.
Yes.
Right? And Virginia plays,
is it Wisconsin again? I forget. I don't even have it in front of me.
We still have still in football mode, and we will get to that.
Yes.
Fully in a few weeks. But I know Virginia Tech does have Iowa.
Yes.
I typed it into a schedule last night. Duke last night.
Wow.
Against Michigan State.
What a terrific November basketball game. And for the Blue Devils to win without Marvin Bagley, who got the scratched eye, and to out-rebound Michigan State. I mean, Michigan State is annually one of the toughest, meanest, best rebounding squads in the country. And Duke out rebounds, I believe it was by 12. Tom Izzo was not happy after the game. And then Grayson Allen just went off. 37 points, career high. I think he was 7 of 11 from beyond the arc. That's a great, great win.
It is, because they're with four freshmen, they're going to get better, I think. And
Trayvon
for them,
Duval is the deal.
Yes. And they're only, I mean, they're going to get better, and they're already beating the likes of Michigan State on a neutral court, which should pay off when it gets time to tournament time in March, right? You're going to be in neutral courts.
Yeah.
And you're going to have freshmen who don't think the moment is too big, because they've already been there, I think. I said last week I thought they'd beat Michigan State. Now, had I done a lot of research? No.
Yeah, I didn't think they would.
But I think they're the number one team in the country, and I think they win the national championship.
Well, that's a long ways away, and you know, team health and such. But I think right now they certainly appear to be the most talented team, and they've got that mix very similar to what they had when they last won a national championship, with that freshman class, you know, that included Okafor and Tyus Jones and Justice Winslow. And Grayson Allen came off the bench that night in Indianapolis, and we hadn't heard much from him, and he saved him.
Was Cook the point guard on that
team?
Yeah, Quinn Cook. And he was a senior.
Yep.
So you're right, there's parallels.
And, yes.
But Allen is a more dynamic player.
I mean, oh, yeah.
Obviously, if you watched the game last night, you can see that.
Yeah. And one little personal note about the Duke game last night, just because the family, I've been friends with them for a long time. Jeff Capel, The associate head coach at Duke. He's actually Jeff the Third. His dad, Jeff Capel, who Jeff Jr., who coached at Old Dominion, and later coached in the NBA, passed away from complications to ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. And just thoughts and prayers go out to the Capels. You know, Jeff played at Duke. Jason played it in North Carolina. I watched both those kids grow up. And I encourage anyone who might be interested. Jeff Capel on the Players Tribune last year wrote a tribute to his dad shortly after he was diagnosed. And it is powerful and moving, and it will be time well spent to read it. Thank you.